Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
So hello and welcome, this is our Charlton Live Player of the Year dinner special for 2017-18. We're coming to you from the North Stand Lounge here, live from the dinner. My name is Louis Mendes. Joining me here at the Valley is Terry Smith. How are you doing, Terry?
I'm very well, thanks. Yeah, thank you. And you?
Yeah, I'm in a good mood, looking forward to the playoffs.
Why not? Well, I don't know about looking forward to, but...
3 days away.
But yeah, exactly. The nerves haven't reached fever pitch yet, but I'm expecting it.
Yeah, and also joining us here is Nathan Muller. How are you doing, Nathan?
Living the dream.
Still got all your underpants with you?
I've no idea what you're talking about.
Oh, I can explain it if you want.
No, we'll swerve that one. Yeah, no, I'm really, really good, mate. Look forward to Thursday.
Excellent.
He's sitting very close to me, so I'm glad he's got a pair on.
And also joining us here in the North Stand Lounge is Tom Welling. How are you doing, Tally's man, Tom?
Yeah, good.
Yes. And you enjoy the Rochdale game?
No
one did.
But it's done, isn't it?
Yeah.
Important stuff's over.
It did get to a stage maybe about 10 minutes in, I was like, oh, come on.
Yeah.
I want to go out tonight. Let's just get this over and done with, and then
what the players were doing as well.
Yeah, and then we can go out and enjoy ourselves, and that's exactly what we did. So, of course, we're coming to you from the Player of the Year dinner. Later on during this show, we're going to find out who the 2017-18 Player of the Year for Charlton Athletic is. Also, we'll find out the Young Player of the Year as well, and hopefully we'll be able to get a chance to have an exclusive interview with them later on in the evening. But whilst we're sort of gearing up for the evening to really get going, we're going to talk about Saturday's defeat at Rochdale very briefly, because it doesn't really matter. But more importantly, of course, we're going to now focus on the fact that Charlton have qualified for the League One playoffs. We've got Shrewsbury coming up here at the Valley on Thursday evening, so that's something that we've got to look forward to and try and work out how Charlton are going to play. Right, first things first, I did say we will very briefly look back at the game against Rochdale. So let's have a quick listen to how it went down.
Davis goes out to the left, and Doan, who swings the ball into the box where Andrews is waiting. Thompson's there as well, but it'll drop to Rafferty. Rafferty hooks it back across. That's Conza with a header out to Andrews. Andrews back to Davis. Slam shot, and it's in!
What a
Thompson, I think,
goal,
is it, for the final touch. The crowd go wild.
What a massive goal for Rochdale. The circumstances doesn't change anything from a Charlton point of view. They'll be bitterly disappointed with the way the goal happened. Just some poor defending. There might have been a foul in the penalty area as Conza with a little push came down to Thompson, the substitute, who rifles home for Rochdale, who are now out of the relegation zone as it stands. It's a great story though. Joe Thompson, who had cancer, been battling cancer, could give Rochdale the goal that could keep them up. From their point of view, it's great. Charlton point of view, they switched off. Bitterly disappointed with that. But as it stands, of course, Charlton are still in that playoff spot. No need to panic. Plymouth losing 4-1 still to Gillingham.
And I think Greg Stubley's commentary there right at the end, where he says there's no need to panic, we're still in the playoff spot, sort of summed up our entire performance, really. There was no need to panic. We knew early on that Gillingham had taken a lead. They were pegged back by Plymouth, but then they did go 3-1 up. And I mean, by the time the second half went 4-1, then I was on the beach officially. If they had a beach in Rochdale, I would have been on it.
Talking on the way up, and even in the days before, about what would happen if Plymouth got an early couple of goals, would we really start to panic? What would be the feeling like? And exactly the reverse happened. Yeah. Gillingham went a couple of goals up early on, and we're thinking, actually, we can relax now. And I don't think anybody will admit it necessarily, but I think the players would have been hearing that score. Certainly at half time, they would have known. Mm. And you can't blame them for relaxing.
Yeah, I mean, Jacko certainly did admit it, actually, in the interview in the tunnel.
I don't know if anybody had seen that yet.
So. So, I mean, Jacko said that we the Charlton players knew what was going on elsewhere. That sort of helped Lee Bowyer choose what subs to make. Jake Forster-Caskey came off early. You know, it's fair to say we were quite clearly playing within ourselves as well.
Yeah, I think so. And I mean, obviously, when it started, I was nervous, as obviously I was on Thursday. And then as soon as, obviously, the goal went in from Gillingham, it started to started to think, well, maybe this is going to be our time and we're going to get promoted. But like you say, we brought JFC come off and stuff, and obviously you got the little cameo from JJ, which was nice to see, just a nice little 10 minute appearance. But yeah, it wasn't the greatest. Can't remember us having a shot, or unless
two officially.
Oh right, I can't really remember him though.
We had a couple of sort of half shots. I mean, Borsakowski had a free kick that went over. He had one that was deflected just wide. But I mean, it wasn't really that sort of day where you really cared what was going on, did you? I mean, because we knew we were fine. Rochdale was still battling for everything, and you know, you want to save yourselves for what's coming up now, because when we've got two massive tests coming up as well.
Yeah, and you're spot on. I think as soon as that goal went in at Gillingham, and you think, right, Plymouth have got to score however many they had to, and obviously we had that let off early on in terms of Rochdale not getting the early goal. Everyone just sort of relaxed, and it had an inevitability about it where we knew we were going to get to the playoffs, and we knew what, 10 minutes in, and I just think everyone then, I mean, the fans had a great day out. I thought the atmosphere was great, but the players seemed to know as well, and they all switched off, and it was just, like you say, just kind of coasting through and protecting themselves a little bit.
I think the only player who didn't switch off was Jason Pearce.
I don't think he's got an option. He hasn't.
And that bit by the corner flag where they were holding it into the corner, he was in there, he was trying to kick him up in the air. It was just
And obviously Nathan mentioned their special mention. We were hoping it was going to happen here last week when everyone was at the Valley for Jacko, but he got his 499th appearance on the pitch, a little cameo at the end there, and just seeing him walking out onto that pitch, and I'm not going to say for the last time, because he's dreaming of a 500th at Wembley, but to see him out there once again, you know, for one of the last times, was a really special moment for everyone who travelled.
Yeah, and it was nice that we were able to relax to a point where he could do that, you know, and it's a shame we couldn't do that the week before as well. Let's hope we can do it either, and probably not on Thursday, but certainly the return leg, or even the game after that, if there is one.
Hopefully.
When there is one.
Yeah.
Sorry, yeah, okay.
Now, of course, the other reason Saturday was special was not from a Charlton point of view, it's more from a Rochdale point of view. They, you know, it's actually quite exciting hanging around in Spotland after the full-time whistle went, because they were waiting on the Oldham result. Oldham needed to drop points for Rochdale to stay up with their victory. The Oldham was at 2-2, and they were 5 or 6, 7 minutes perhaps behind our game, so there was a long old wait after the final whistle went, and I mean, that you could cut the tension with a knife. I think I tweeted, like, I'm feeling the tension. Realistically, I don't care.
Yeah, I don't care, and it was agony because you're feeling it for them, and everybody had their eyes on the broadcaster who was listening in.
It was the BBC Radio Manchester guy, yeah.
And I don't know if he was doing it deliberately, because I was watching it on the app, the Score app. And I'm pretty sure it came in as the full time, but I thought, well, I'm not going to say it. How can I say it? And so I'm pretty sure I knew the score, unless this thing was lying. And he kept it another 2 minutes before he actually announced it. He was building his part.
Well, then when I watched back on Sky, I watched the coverage. It turns out the players, the Rochdale players, had a feed in the tunnel. So the ones that weren't in the huddle on the pitch, there was 3 or 4 of them in the tunnel watching it with Nicky or Jose. So they had a live feed, so they knew. I don't think it was a delay. Also, I noticed on the Score app, I was looking at the Coventry-Morecambe score, because I was hoping Barnet were going to stay up. And that one said full-time.
Full-time.
And then changed and went back to playing again. So I think those Score apps can get it wrong. Now, of course, the man who scored the winning goal, I mean, what an inspiration, Joseph Thompson, is come back from cancer twice and, you know, saved the day once again.
Yeah, and it's lucky for us that, because Charlton didn't really have any part to play in the game on Saturday, it was nice that we were able to enjoy that as much as they could, I guess. And yeah, I remember seeing the story on, I think they were in the FA Cup coverage, so they got a couple of big games, didn't they, in the FA Cup, and they're on telly and heard all about him. Is it twice he's had cancer?
Yeah.
Recovered twice, and then to come on, I mean, it's fairy tale stuff, isn't it? It's the equivalent of us getting that Jacko winner at Wembley in a few weeks. It's just incredible for him to have to go through that twice, beat it twice, and then score the goal that effectively keeps them up. It's just amazing for him, and as I say, because there was nothing that, you know, it didn't cost Charlton anything, luckily, and it meant that we could enjoy it as well, and it was, yeah, obviously brilliant for him.
Now, when the full-time whistle went, so we were lucky enough to get to speak to Lee Bayer after Tell, and, you know, I mean, I spoke to him, he didn't really have much to say about the performance. He said he knew we could have done better, but he said after what those players had given me over the last 10 games, and he didn't really want to pick up on anything, did he?
No, he didn't. I think the crucial part of the whole interview is when he said, I think, I can't remember how I framed the question now, but it was pretty similar, you know, are you going to have to pick the boys up, because obviously they're going to be disappointed in losing, most players are, after a defeat, and all he said was, I'll guarantee you, you won't see that performance on Thursday.
Yeah, and that, yeah, when he said that to me as well, a little smile came across my face, because I mean, you'd understand why the players were not going at it full throttle, I think it's fair to say.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, of course, because if you're going at it full throttle, and you know, it's so easy, you know, you say it easy in the game to pick up a knock or, you know, pull a muscle, and they're going to be out of potentially, you know, well, to some players, to the biggest game of their career so far, you know, someone who's not really experienced it, so especially playing at Wembley. So yeah, I can't fault the players. Like Bo said, the last 10 games have been absolutely incredible, but, and I agree with Bo's, that won't be here on Thursday, I can guarantee it, especially if we get a massive turnout, which we're all hoping for. So, but yeah, no, we're looking forward to it, but yeah, still nervous.
Yeah, very nervous indeed. Right, let's have a quick break here on Charlton Live. We'll come back in a minute and we will start to look ahead to the playoffs, if you can stand it, because I'm getting nervous just saying those words.
Charlton Live.
Table number three, Jason Pearce. Let's have an applause for Jason Pearce. And on table number five is Ezri Konsa. Ezri Konsa, table number five, standing up over on my left hand side. We've got a good table there. And on table seven, it's Josh McGuinness. Yes. Followed by Johnny Jackson. And the man who promised the playoffs in 10 games, Lee Bowyer!
There we go. We just heard the players being introduced to the room here at the Player of the Year. Johnny got a superb ovation, in particular, as you'd expect, Johnny Jackson at the end there in his final year as a player. And, of course, Lee Bowyer. I mean, what a job he's done. 10 games he's been here, 5 points off the playoffs we were, and he's done it for us.
Best start of any manager at Charlton, and he promised us we'd get in the playoffs. He said we'd be in the top six, and we were.
Yeah, as the MC just said, I mean, if he promised that we're going to win the Champions League in the next 2 years, you'd be leaving it, wouldn't you? You'd be booking your tickets to stay somewhere.
I'm booking my flights now, they'd be nice
yeah.
and cheap.
Yeah, the only problem is we don't know where the final is, so just book them somewhere in Central Europe.
And then I knew there'd be a floor.
Yeah, and then we'd be able to travel there from wherever it is, of course. This is the Player of the Year dinner, but it's a bit of an unusual situation in terms of that it's not at the end of the season for us, because we've managed to get into those playoffs, and you know, it's all well and good, you know, getting into the playoffs, but they don't think about the fans' health, do they? Because now we're 3 days away from one of the biggest games we've had down at the Valley for years now. You know, you think about the last playoff semi-final we had here against Swindon was a second leg, obviously this is a first leg, but you know, you've got to try and get some sort of advantage to take to Shrewsbury away, and you know, so it's all the fun of getting there now has just been taken over for me by this massive nerves.
Yeah, I think, I mean, we was talking off air in terms of obviously the playoffs itself, and I think since Bo's come in, we're a lot harder to beat. I think we've only conceded 5 goals, I think, maybe, or something like that, since he's come in, and I think as long as we don't lose the first leg, I'm quite confident of actually get into Wembley, but I think that's why Thursday's going to be absolutely huge. You know, in an ideal world we'll go there with 2-0 so we can sort of breathe a little bit, but I think it's going to be quite cagey, so I think the Thursday's going to be massive and we need to get some sort of result here for sure.
Mm. I mean Nathan mentioned 2-0 there. I mean, we might be getting slightly ahead of ourselves there, but yeah. I mean, what sort of lead do you need to get from a home game to take into that away leg? Because I mean, you go there 2-0 up, you don't know how to set up, surely. I mean, do you go defensive and try and see it out? Do you go and try and nick a third and risk letting one in anyway?
Yeah, it's really difficult to tell. I think when you look at the two games we had against them this year, they've been chalk and cheese, and partly down to the managerial changes and stuff, but we really weren't at it when we played them here. And over there we put in one of our typical battling Bowyer performances. So if we can get a performance like that both times this time, which Bowyer's promised us, and as we said a minute ago, everything he's promised so far has happened, I don't think we'll have any problem with them. I really don't. The problem is if we have an off day. If that's the case, like you say, even if we were to win here 3-0, you concede an early goal there and it's not guaranteed. So I don't know. I don't think it's necessarily the score that's that important. If we put in a good performance here and get a 1-1 draw, there's nothing wrong with that either, because we've shown we can go away to the likes of them, the likes of Portsmouth, and get results. So, it's difficult. You have to kind of take each game in isolation and not worry too much. If the first leg doesn't go your way, you've got the second leg to put it right. So,
how much do you read into the form that both teams have shown at the end of the season? So, obviously, Charlton have won 6 of the last 10 since Bowyer's come in, only lost 3 in that time. Now, Shrewsbury, since they lost the EFL Trophy final against Lincoln, I think they've only won 1 in the last 6.
I think you'd say the only time that really the form goes out the window normally is at the final. I think in the semis it's still relevant, because you've seen years before, and in playoff semi-finals in years before, the team that's on a roll tend to do the best in those circumstances. Now, I think the first leg's also always fairly cagey as far as I remember, so I don't expect any different on Thursday. I think it will be a fairly cagey affair, and I wouldn't be surprised if it's quite tight. Could be a draw, or at least one team wins 1-0, because you get to the second leg and then it's another cup final, then it's all about who wins on the day then.
And just at the back of your mind, Nave, do you worry about the fact that we lost on the last day? I mean, they also lost against Milton Keynes, and it does show teams surely weren't going at it full pelt, because we knew we were pretty much there. They've been safe in the playoffs for a long time. They thought they might have had a chance of automatic, so surely you're not going to read too much into the fact we lost at Rochdale.
No, not at all. I think if you looked at the game as the whole, for those who were there, you could tell that, not that the players didn't want to win, of course they're still professionals, but you could probably tell they've probably shaved off 10% of what they usually would have done, because like you say, Thursday's a bigger game in the grand scheme of things, and yeah, it's going to be difficult. I mean, I looked at the bookies earlier, and they're all, each of the four teams, they're all quite close together in terms of winning it, which backs up Terry's point about it being very cagey. It could be a draw first leg, but I wouldn't read too much into it. You can't read too much into it. I mean, Shrewsbury, their form dipped a little bit, but they still got how many points did they end up having? What, 87 points? So they're still a good team. But yeah, it's just who can hold their nerves, I think.
Yeah, I know, I was just putting a theory out there the other day, Tom, that perhaps, you know, we know how Shrewsbury play. We know what their strengths are. They were really physical here at the Valley, you know, organised as well. But, you know, playing arguably, you know, that hard for a long campaign where they were overachieving throughout the whole time. Do you think that's maybe just slightly taken out of them? Am I just sort of guessing here and hoping that that's going to be the case?
No, I don't think so, because when you look back at past times, there's plenty of teams that come into the playoffs third and struggle, and the team that makes that rush, that breaks in at the last couple of places, tend to do very well. So it's a pattern we've seen playoff after playoff. I don't think that means we can take them for granted. We they're up there for a reason, and they've had a fantastic season. But as you say, the work that Bowyer puts our players through as well, both teams have worked, you know, really, really hard. And we heard today saying, you know, they're not going to be here late because Bowyer wants to get them home and get them rested, ready for Thursday as well. So, yeah, it's the same every year. It's exciting. You never really know what's going to happen in the playoffs. And form, to a certain extent, does go out the window. And it comes down to whoever can hold their nerve and perform better on the day. And as I say, when we perform on our day, I think we're arguably the best team in the league. You look at Blackburn, we've beaten them. You look at Portsmouth, you look at Shrewsbury on our day, we've beaten all the teams up there barring Wigan, and even there we put in a good 0-0 draw. So I think on our day there's no one here that we should be scared of.
Now, we spoke to Jacko in the tunnel after the game at Rochdale. Of course, he was talking about you asked him about the fact that we've won up there recently, and obviously we lost here against Shrewsbury in February. But Jacko said, if there is an edge to be gained, you will gain it by winning the more recent tie. So do you think that would just be sort of at the back of Shrewsbury's mind? I think they got given a bit of a test by Charlton when we went up to the New Meadow a few weeks ago.
I think they probably underestimated us a little bit in the return game up there, because they absolutely battered us at our place in the first game. But I think you have to remember also that they were without Beckles that day up at Shrewsbury, who was probably their best player down here when they beat us. And Wally went off injured on half-time, who was also one of their best players. Now, they're both back. So it's going to be a different story again, because they've got pretty much a full-strength side probably to pick from. So, you know, I think Tom's right. If we play to our potential, then we should be okay. It's whether or not we can play that well for the next two games. And if we play that well for the next two games, then fine.
It was interesting, wasn't it, when you think about the difference about the two games, where we were the home team, we came absolutely flying out the blocks for the first 5 minutes or so, still under Carl Robinson, of course, and then Paul Hurst changed things up slightly, and they just found a sort of a change within his team, and then Shrewsbury quite comfortably defended against us, and then started to create chances and score and look dangerous. Now, if you look at the other game, the away leg, it was very different. We were, you know, defensive. We were, in fact, in that first half, I remember away from home thinking we weren't keeping the ball well. I didn't think we actually played that well in the first half, other than just defending well and not giving them chances. But then after we'd worn them down for, you know, up until the last 20 minutes, that's when we started to go forward and start to create our chances. So it'll be interesting to see how Lee Bowyer tries to set him up. I mean, you'd assume as the home team on Thursday that we're going to try and come flying out the blocks. But when we did that in the first game, Paul Hurst found a way to stop us quite quickly.
Yeah, and that's, I think it's a good point in terms of how Bowe's going to do it, because I think the home game, I wasn't at the away game, but the home game, I remember they pressed us really high and we didn't seem to know what to do. So we just kept trying to play it across the back, trying to play it to our midfielders, and they were crowding us out and we didn't really have a plan B, so to speak. So it'll be interesting. I think we will have to take the initiative and take it to Shrewsbury. Obviously, could be in the home side, but I think without going too gung ho, I think. Mm. But
now, I mean, I've been talking about this for weeks now because we know that. I mean, the latest update we've had on Tariq Fosu is that. I mean, Lee Bowyer said during a press day, I think last Thursday, that if he is going to be fit at all in the playoffs, it will be to come off the bench in the final. So that, unless that changes, it sounds like we're going to have to deal without him, particularly for the semi-finals. I mean, how big a miss is he? I mean, if you look at the players that we're going to need to step up in his place, you've got Mark Marshall, who's been really hard working, but perhaps going forward hasn't quite found what he needs just yet. And you've got Sully Kaiko, unfortunately, he's been a bit of a disappointment so far.
Yeah, Fosu would be a huge miss if he's not able to play, which it sounds like that's the case. You know, I don't think he's going to win tonight, but that's purely down to his injuries, because when he has played, he's been one of our best players for sure, especially going forwards. I think Marshall is the one for me. He's just gone from strength to strength, and I'd be happy with him as a replacement. Obviously got Reeves, you've got Mavadidi up there as well. Kai Kai, again, I know the whole squad was slightly off it the weekend, but again did nothing to impress me. Similarly with Zyro up front. So for me, you're looking at Mark Marshall, you're looking at Ben Reeves, you're looking at people like Jada Silva, put in a good shift on Saturday again, got in some good attacking positions, so we're going to need to rely on the likes of him as well. Joe Aribo obviously came back as well at the weekend and played okay in a game that nobody stood out. So we've got other options. Obviously Fosu's a huge miss to any side, as is Billy Clark, who we've obviously had out since around Christmas time. But you know, that they're the cards we're dealt, and we've got to play that hand. We've got players that are able to come in and do a job in place of him, as we've shown in some of the more recent games. So yeah, it's a big loss, but not one that we can't overcome.
Got some rest into some vital players on Saturday as well. The likes of Josh McGuinness, Nikia Jose didn't play. Jake Forster-Kaski came off early as well. I'm sure that there's plenty of others as well. So, I mean, that could be really important. It does show that Lee Bowyer was very much planning for Thursday, because, you know, it's something we've talked about as well in terms of the quick turnarounds. That Bowyer's always talked about the Saturday-Tuesday games are really hard to work with. So Saturday-Thursday, it's a slightly longer gap. It probably messes up your routine and your structure slightly as well, but it's something else they're going to have to learn to deal with.
I think his big issue will not be the Thursday game, it'll be the Sunday game.
Yeah.
I think players will have enough rest in them, I think, by Thursday to not have a problem with that. But to turn that around for the Sunday, the following Sunday, but Shrewsbury in the same position. I mean, if both sides who are... we know that Shrewsbury are a physical and high-pressing style of play, because we saw it down here, so they'll try and emulate that and try and do the same. So they're going to put the same sort of shift in that we're going to have to do. So you're probably by Sunday, I think by sort of midway through the second half on Sunday, I think every single player will be on their knees if both teams play the way they normally play.
Yeah. So right, have you two got your tickets sorted for the?
I've got the home one sorted.
Was it easy? Because I've seen a lot of people moaning about it.
Mine was no problems at all. I've done mine on the train on the way back from Manchester on Sunday. But yeah, it was easy. And then obviously I think the away ones are tomorrow. So
yeah, you sorted out your tickets.
Yeah. Again, I had no problems at all. Just logged in and there was my season ticket, and it said, "Do I want to?" It was reserved for me for 2 days, and I could just buy it. So I know some people have had issues, but no, it was easy enough for me.
I mean, what sort of crowd do you expect we'll get down here? Because if you think about the game against Swindon, I think it was probably about 18,000 we had that season a few years ago.
Yeah, it's difficult. I mean, because it's a Thursday night, a lot of people could come from work maybe, but I don't know. I don't know what the about kids and stuff. I don't. Is it half term at the moment or anything? Or
no.
So again, I don't. It's going to be a late one. But I think maybe something similar to Blackburn. I'm hoping for, whether or not it is or not, I don't know, because it's a night game. But I'm hoping similar to Blackburn, same atmosphere. You know, the fans were great again on Saturday, Sunday rather, or Saturday. Can't remember which one it was.
Saturday.
Yeah. So I just got really. I don't know about Shrewsbury. I don't know if they'll bring, because they've got 3,000, haven't they? You were saying, Terry, you don't think they'll fill it out, do you?
Well, it's a tough ask, isn't it, on a Thursday night to come down from Shrewsbury. And you know, we found at Rochdale, travelling back from Rochdale, even on a Saturday, wasn't great. So how easy it's going to be for Shrewsbury fans to get here and back on Thursday is a debatable one, so I don't know. I can't remember. Did they sell out the end in the league game? I don't think.
Yeah,
they did.
Not quite, but it was Football for a Fiver.
So you never know. It's possible.
Now, I was interested also yesterday. I was watching back the Sky coverage of the Rochdale game, and we were watching the post match chat with Ed Stuart McCall, obviously the former Bradford City manager, and he was asked for his pick out of the four that have gone into the playoffs, and he went for Rotherham, which I found interesting because obviously I've only seen them play twice, and both times they got beat by us. Now, so I mean, interesting that the way that a manager who, of course, has played against these teams throughout this season before he got let go, that he would pick them. I mean, when you look at the four that are, or the other three that are in there with us, Tell, do you have like a one that you think, or they stand out as someone who's might be a big problem?
I mean, if you, on the face of it, you'd say Shrewsbury, wouldn't you? That would be the side that people wouldn't want to face because they're so far clear at the top of the pile, the top of the four, if you like. But Rotherham supposedly got the form, but I'd say Scunthorpe in the last six games haven't lost any of the last five. They've only drawn one, and they've won four. So if you looked at the form guide of the last five games, you'd say Scunthorpe was the team that you want to avoid.
It was interesting with Scunthorpe that when they did have that long winless run until they came to the Valley. That was their first win in 9 or 10, and possibly only their second in about 15 or 16 at the time. And even then,
that's because they sacked the manager, wasn't it?
They sacked Gary Alexander. They didn't actually look that good when they came here and beat us, but they've clearly improved since then. Got that result against Plymouth in last midweek that made our lives a lot easier as well. So, I mean, yeah, Rotherham as well would have that little bit of a run. That's the other thing to point out, that every team other than Shrewsbury, who are possibly even having one now, have had a bad run at some point this season. I don't know how normal that is for the teams that have been in the playoffs. And you look at Plymouth, who were knocking on the door. They won one game in the first like 3 or 4 months against us. You know, the amount of teams that have got in after having bad runs is quite interesting.
It just shows the quality of the league, and it's something we said a few weeks ago. It's such a poor standard, this league, and Blackburn and Wigan ran away with it. Shrewsbury are up there points wise as well, but nobody really, apart from those two sides, for me, is impressed. I mean, when we've lost games, I'm so frustrated because we've really let ourselves down to lose a lot of the games we have. As I say, probably aside from Wigan here when they beat us comfortably. And for me, the league's a poor standard, and that just shows. I mean, Bradford went on a run where they didn't win for ages and eventually dropped out of it. But everybody else up there has had bad runs and has still managed to stick around. And like you say, even up until our game against Portsmouth, they were still in it. Plymouth were still in it up until the last day. And as you said, they didn't win for the whole part of early part of the season. We had that poor run. So everyone has had it. It's a poor standard of league, but again, you've got to be in there, and we're in it now. You know, it's like buying a ticket to the lottery. We bought the ticket, we're in there now. It's now about getting the job done.
I know Terry doesn't like doing predictions, but just in general for all three of us, I mean, we're looking ahead to Thursday now. How do we see the game going? Do we see it being a very similar one to the home league game against Shrewsbury, where they come out and stop us, or do we find a way around them today?
I think our performance will be better than the home game, because I don't think you can get any worse than our home game, because we're really poor. But yeah, I think it's going to be quite nervy. I don't think anyone's going to obviously want to make a mistake. I think thinking about it, you know, obviously in my heart, I want it in a 2-0 win, but I agree with Tell. I think it's going to be a 0-0 or 1-0 or something. But I find us difficult to beat, so I fancy us away from home as well. But I don't know. We'll soon see on Thursday. I don't know how I'm going to cope, but I'll find a way somehow.
Yeah, Tell, I mean, without going completely for a prediction, I mean, how important is it, for example, that we take a lead to Shrewsbury in your mind?
It'd be fantastic, but as I think I said earlier, the away leg will be another cup. It will be a cup final. It'll be a cup final before the final, because whatever the score is here, now unless we absolutely one or the other side tonks the other one 4 or 5-0, it's going to be all on that Sunday game. So, I mean, I'm hope I'm wrong, and I hope we do tonk them. In the first leg, it'd be great to go up there with a huge lead that we can just protect. I suspect it won't be like that, because we don't tend to beat anybody 5 or 6-0, do we? So I'm expecting if even a couple would be great. But I'm with Nathan. I think it'd be a cagey one, and wouldn't amaze me if it's a draw. but if we can sneak a 1 or 2 nil win, that'd be great.
Tom?
Yeah, cagey and nervy game, I think. I'd be more than happy with a draw. I think it's important we score first at home. I haven't seen us on too many occasions where we've gone behind, managed to come back. So, I think we need to score first. I think the crowd will help, whatever the size. I think it's going to be a passionate crowd, and we've seen the atmosphere that the fans have been able to create, not only away from home, but the home game against Blackburn was absolutely unbelievable as well. So, yeah, I'm expecting a nervy game. Hopefully the players don't feel the nerves too much and can get themselves ahead, and then, as I say, if we did get pegged back for the draw, it's not the end of the world.
Right, so the dinner has been served here at the Valley. All the guests and the players are currently sitting down enjoying it. It looked like a bit of beef, actually. It looked quite nice. So they're enjoying
it. You were staring at it rather jealously.
I was, actually. Yeah, it did look quite nice. I've had a sandwich from Sainsbury's, which should suffice me, I thought, but it turns out not, because there's lots of nice food hanging around. Right, we'll have another quick break here on the Charlton Live Player of the Year Dinner 2017-18 podcast special.
Charlton Live.
Right, welcome back to Charlton Live, our Player of the Year Dinner special. We've just had here at the Valley the Community Trust Awards dished out. Jason Pearce won the award for the player that's done the most within the local community, so it's a well done to him for that very important award. Kim Dixon got an award as well, so great to see those people recognised. Right, obviously we are here at the Player of the Year Dinner. We've been caught up in the fact that we are still in the promotion hunt, of course, with the playoffs, but we do need to talk about the fact that it is Player of the Year, and therefore we need to try and pick one. Now, I've been banging the drum for Jake Forster-Caskey for a little while now. He's been my pick over the course of the season, but I'm interested to hear what you guys think. So I'll start with you.
I'd make you right, actually. I think if I was going to pick, and I would have voted, I did vote for Jake Forster-Caskey, because over the season, probably, he's been the most consistent. I think Jason Pearce, who you just mentioned, I think if he'd have been playing the whole season, I don't think there'd have been anybody else but Jason Pearce for Player of the Year. Equally, you've got Ben Amos, who's, again, especially recently, maybe had a shaky start, but certainly recently he's been outstanding, Ben Amos, so he'd be up there or thereabouts. And Jay De Silva, who's been superb every time he plays. So there are a few contenders, I think.
I mean, in Tariq Fosu in particular, you think the amount of players who goes into that bracket of, if they'd had a full season because of injuries, they'd be right up there. And you think about how good Fosu's been before he got injured, and then when he came back sort of early on in 2018, I remember saying to my other half, we're going towards a game and he was on the bench against Warsaw, I think it was, and we were drawing 1-0, and I sort of said, if he was to come on, don't expect anything too much, because he's coming back from injury. Came on, changed that game, and just started where he left off. So I mean, players like that, who, if they didn't have these lengthy injury spells, you'd think there'd be so many contenders.
Yeah, no, and exactly. And Fosu's been, I mean, obviously he went through that patch as well where he just seemed to score every time he touched the ball, and he did have the injury spell, which obviously put him out in stride a little bit. But I agree with Tel. I think Jake's been, for me anyway, we've been the most consistent. But like, we can always pick different players at different stages of the season, and that's why I went for Jake, because he seems to have been there all throughout. But it's going to be interesting.
Yeah, Tom, have you got a personal pick you would have gone for?
I mean, unless I start naming people like Naby Sarr, I'm only going to agree with what these guys have said. I think my first pick would have been Forster-Caskey as well, but I mean, like, De Silva and Amos are probably the other two front runners. I would say those three over the whole season, but I think Billy Clark and Tariq Fosu probably would be up there if it weren't for injuries that have kept them out as well. So look, I think, yeah, it's going to be out of them three for me, but I think you could make an argument for those two as well, really, and probably Jason Pearce as well. Second half of the season, the work he's done, and again, his season was hampered by injury too, so he's another one that's performed very well in his role as captain this year. So it's nice to be able to have this discussion, because the last few years we've kind of been slim pickings and looking around for people, but this year I think there's quite a few people we could choose
from. Yeah, I was going to say, this is definitely the first year I can remember coming to the dinner where I didn't know already who'd won, and you know, not because I've been told, but because you just knew who was going to win. And this year it's completely up in the air, which in a way suggests, you know, it does show we've had a pretty decent season. Now, we've had a hugely disappointing run in the middle of that season, but at the start and at the finish, then we've shown we've got some decent players, and that's why people are going to feel a bit more confident going to the playoffs. But you know, it's that age-old question: where would we be if we hadn't had those injuries?
I mean, there's a few questions in that. You know, where would we be if Bowyer had taken over about five games before, or 10 games before? If there hadn't been that turmoil with proposed takeover, and therefore Robinson maybe wouldn't have had his attention diverted elsewhere, would he have got us to this position? Who knows? But I think could say the same last season as well. Jason, we weren't the same side when Jason Pearce wasn't playing last season either. So I mean, and I think this season it's worse because both him, Tariq Fosu, and are the two that stand out with the injuries. Billy Clark, as Tom mentioned, was outstanding before he got his injury, and I think we've really missed him. If those three had stayed fit the whole season, I don't think we'd be talking about playoffs.
Now, if there was an award handed out for most improved player, the sort of one they hand out at like kids clubs and stuff, I was just thinking there'd probably be a couple of options for that now, and you're looking at someone like Naby Sarr, who you think about when he first came here 2-3 years ago, with all due respect to Naby, didn't play anywhere near the level that we'd expect of a championship player, and then he went out on loan, and when he came back I wasn't expecting much. Now, I'm not saying he's come back in and he's as good as Pearce or anything like that, but he's certainly improved. Now, and the other one I've gone for is Carlin Ahern Grant. Now, obviously he's ended the season unfortunately on loan at Crawley, so we haven't seen the very best of him, but I thought in spells this season, I remember him playing away at Oldham in the 4-3, where I thought he actually looked quite handy before he got injured and taken off. Then he had that little run of goals where he got a few sort of in the FA Cup and the League Cup, and of course he scored that incredible equaliser in the 2-2 comeback against Peterborough. He's been a much improved player as well, and he's gone on to Crawley and banged in loads of goals for them. So, you know, if there was a player who you perhaps has been an unexpected, better than expected that you've seen this season, which one would you go for?
I'd go for someone different. I'd go for Dick Steele, just because he came in. He's sort of an unknown quantity unless you sort of followed it, you know, the youth at a reasonable level. I thought he was more of a DM when he was coming through, but he's slotting in at right back, and you know, every time he's played, he's put a decent little shift in. There was a home game, I can't remember which one it was, but I think he's been improved. But yeah, Carlin Ahern Grant, he did start, started with us last year, and he's gone on to Crawley and do better things. But it'd be interesting to see if he's in the fold next year, but I'd probably just go for Dick Steele just because he was. I didn't even expect him to be in the fold, let alone play the amount of games that he has.
I think if you don't look at it as a thing that you know you're awarded as a kid, and you see it as you've got to be bad to start with and therefore improved. Someone like Joe Aribo this year, as an improved player this season, has been tremendous, because yes, he came in last year and he played a few games and he looked good, but this year he's added goals to his game. He's learnt to kind of take games by the scruff of the neck and drag us through games. His forward running is so much more improved. And as I say, he's coming from a good place because he was good for us last season as well. But I think the improvement he's made this year, if he can continue to do that, I mean, I'm sure he's on Premier League radars already, but the improvements he's made this year have been amazing as well.
I wonder if you can even speak about Jake Forster-Caskey in that bracket then, when you think about where he was in the middle of last season. He came in January, I think he had a bit of an injury as well, so he was sort of in and out, but then towards the end of last season started scoring these goals, and funnily enough that was all credited to Lee Bowyer coming in to help out the midfielders towards the end of last season. And at the start of this season as well, he's got a handful of goals. They've dried up a little bit, if you're going to be ultra-ly critical, but I'm not really going to be, because like I said he's still my player of the season personally, and I think he's done superb. But you know, if you look at the players that have come in and improved under, and you know, I've given credit to Carl Robinson for this as well, but you know, under the likes of Lee Bowyer since he's come in and started coaching, you know, it added to the fact that since he's taken over as manager, it's shown that behind the scenes as well, we've got these improvements since Bayer's come in.
I'd agree, and I think the reason perhaps his goals dried up a little bit is because he was having to fill the void of Akmekashi in that sort of battling defensive midfield role that we desperately needed, and he's added that to his game. So I tend to agree with that statement. Even Patrick Bauer, when you think about it, who's always had.
Yeah.
Everybody used to say about Patrick, they used to love him as a centre half, but he always had a mistake in him. Well, he seems to have cut those out, apart from the slip, which you can't really blame him for.
Yeah.
At Wimbledon, you can't really add that down as a mistake. So, and he's formed that partnership alongside Jason Pearce, and they look rock solid now. So, I think it's a difficult one, because under Bowyer, everybody seems to have improved.
Mm-hmm. Now, as a separate award, we're going to start dishing out our own awards here on Toronto, I've decided. So, I mean, if you have to go for a new player this season, so someone we signed in the summer or in January, if you had to pick the best out of that, you're looking at, you know, the likes of Billy Clark, Mark Marshall, Ben Reeves, there'd be others in there as well. Of course, the lone players that have come in throughout the season, you've got one that sort of stands out as the one who's really impressed, and then maybe perhaps one that's come in and not quite hit the heights that we were hoping for.
Well, I think you could probably say that of a few of the new ones. Ben Reeves took a while to settle. Mark Marshall, probably because he was asked to play a completely different role than the one he was used to playing, took longer than we'd hoped. to settle in and bed in. I think probably out of all of the new ones that came in, Tariq obviously was the high profile one that flew as soon as he started. But I'd go with Billy Clark. I think I don't think we can overestimate the effect his injury had on us as a side,
especially the way we were playing in that 4-2-3-1. Now I just wonder where Clark would have fit into a 4-4-2 actually, unless he played as more of a just off the striker.
It
was so important for us in that early part of the season, and that would explain why some of our form dropped off. Because I mean, obviously a lot of fans were critical of the 4-3-2-1 formation as the season went on, and we weren't winning with it, but when we were winning with it, we were playing some really nice stuff, and he was integral to that.
Yeah, I think with Billy, as he proved in the earlier part of the season, he was that little pivot in between the midfield and the strikers, when he was always getting into the little pockets, which I think sometimes Ben Reeves does do that, but I find Ben Reeves drops a little bit deeper sometimes. And I thought that our link-up play without him in the team, it just meant we were going too direct sometimes and just hoping to get the knockdowns. But I think we've all said on the show before how instrumental Billy was, and the guys have already echoed it already, saying if he was fit for the whole season, probably Billy would probably be in that top four player of the year, because he just showed how much of a great player he is. But Ben Amos is a newcomer as well, isn't he? So that's what I mean. It's harder to pick that, as you said earlier, Lou. For the last few years, we were maybe getting one or two, whereas this year you could possibly say it's between four or five.
Now, Tom, of the lone players that we've had this season, obviously we've had quite a few. Ben Amos, Jada Silva as the star, Michael Zaire has been in there. We've got plenty more than that as well. If you had to pick one of those that, if you were given a blank checkbook and you could told you can have one of these players for next season, which one would you go for?
Ben Amos. It would have to be him. I mean, look, De Silva's fantastic, but Page has shown that he can do well in that position as well. Jairo, Kaikai haven't done enough for me, but you know, no discredit to Dylan Phillips, by the way, because when he's come in, I think he's done okay, but we need a senior goalkeeper at the club. And Ben Amos, for me, has gone from strength to strength. As I said on the show the other day, we spoke to him around the Bradford game when we won 1-0, and he was just on the cusp then of being that keeper that we were a bit nervy about to actually being a very good keeper, and he kept us in that game. And he's just built from there, and he's pulled off some saves towards the end of this season that have certainly kept us in the playoffs. So, yeah, if I could only pick one, it would be him for certain.
Now, right, another one we're going to think about now, and this is something that I'm hoping hasn't happened yet, because I'm trying to pick favourite game of the season. Now, we've had some corkers this season, we've had some pretty bad ones as well, as we well know, but there's been some great games this season. If you look at the, you know, even the opening day, we had to battle to that 1-0 win after going down to 10 men after 7 minutes when Lee Novak got sent off. We beat Bristol Rovers by a 1-0. We had that superb 4-1 win at home to Northampton early on. Rotherham away was on my birthday when we won 2-0, and that was the day I remember saying to Ollie Groom after, right, I believe now. I believe that we've got a team that can challenge this year. We won 2-0 up there. 4-3 win at Oldham. There's been some real crackers there. But then you go down and think about the 1-0 defeat at Gillingham. And that's all been plain sailing. I mean, if you had to pick one, maybe the comeback against Peterborough when we were 2-0 down going into injury time. There has been a lot of good moments. If you had to pick a favourite, Terry, thus far?
That's a tough one. I think maybe because it was more recent, I think the one that sticks in my mind most was the Portsmouth away performance and result. I think that for after what we'd seen prior to Lebo coming in the previous 3 or 4 weeks. And the lowest point was Blackpool away, I think. I'd probably get Portsmouth edges it for me, I think, because I think up to that point we'd sort of promised a lot, but not didn't look like we were going to deliver much. But I think Portsmouth is when I really started to think this could happen.
Now, if you got a favourite one, I mean, how about the one where we were in the doldrums and all of a sudden we were playing Plymouth, the form team in the side, yep, and then Lebo, you just exploded into
that's
life.
That's exactly what I was going to say. Obviously, my love for Lee is well documented, but that was the time.
By the police.
but that was the time when I started to think maybe we can make this now, because the weeks beforehand, you know, the last few games of Robbo's era wasn't the greatest. And I think, like you said, Bo's come in and he sparked us into life. I didn't give us a chance against Plymouth because they went on that insane run. But that was when I started to think maybe we have got something in our locker. And it was the game I remember most, going home like absolutely ecstatic, because I really thought something had happened, and we haven't looked back. But that's why, for me, it was the catalyst of our season, and that's why I'll always think of that game.
Tom, you got a favourite? I mean, you remember, like, I mean, We had that great weekend, of course, the Easter weekend, where we won at Northampton and Rotherham as well. The away win at Shrewsbury was right up for me, just because I'd just about given up. And then as the game was going on, as I say, like the I didn't think we actually played that well in the first half going forward. Mm. And then when we got that goal, and all of a sudden we defended so well, that's when I started to believe. But like I said, there's been so many good ones this season.
Yeah, I think it's hard, and again, like Tell, because it's so recent, it's hard to look past the back-to-back Shrewsbury-Portsmouth week. Mm. Because they were both just incredible performances and exciting games, and obviously the last minute goal, the Josh McGuinness goal, was a lot of fun. But if I think over the whole season, I think Bradford away as well, because that was not somewhere I expected us to get a result.
Mm.
Obviously, I know they'd struggled a bit more at home recently, but what, their last 40 odd games, they'd won 30 something of them, so they had a good home record. At that stage, they were still in with a hunt of playoffs and one of the bigger, better teams in this division. And we went there and yes, it was a scrappy goal, but we held our own. As I say, Ben Amos and the defence that day put in a huge shift. And against both Bradford and the wind and the rain conditions there that ruined your laptop, obviously, as well.
Yeah.
And we battled to a hard-fought 1-0 win. So that was one of those results where I thought, you know what? We've shown that we can do the ugly, dirty stuff that over the last few years we haven't been so good at doing. So that one sticks in the mind for me as well.
And as we're sort of going through this review of the season, I'm just thinking about a very important part of that season, because Michael Zyra has just walked past and reminded me of January. Now, we knew going into January, you know, remember Katrine Mayer left in the end of December. There was all these rumours about a takeover. There was, when it was announced that she was leaving, it was the first time that Duchatelet officially said on the club website that he was getting ready to sell the club. Everyone was up, everyone was happy, you know, hopefully looking to put this very difficult part of our history behind us. All of a sudden, now he's selling the club and it's January and we're having a half-decent season and we need to buy players, but now we're being told that we're not allowed to buy players. And we got to deal with Carl or not, and he was fuming and he was, you know, disgusted about what was going on. And, you know, unfortunately, we're only able to get the likes of Zyro in on loan. Now, I'm not saying he's done badly. Of course, he's been an addition to the squad, but if we could have built on that squad with some permanent signings, people who we knew wanted to come and stay at Charlton for a bit longer time, I mean, A, do you think Carl Robertson would have stayed? And B, do you think he would have found the right players to bring us in and perhaps have made it a bit more comfortable to get into the playoffs, or maybe you've even tried to catch up with that top two?
I'm not sure about the staying bit, because it was reasonably well reported and documented that the owners, whoever they were going to be, would probably want a clean sweep when they took over. So I think what it might have done, if it had been handled quicker, because we're still now in May and it still hasn't happened, if that had happened quicker, I think actually it would have accelerated Robinson going, and maybe we'd have got better players, probably not the right word, but we'd have got more players, and players who would have been permanent signings rather than loan ones.
Mm. I mean, Nathan, I mean, obviously, we've talked throughout the season about the difference between the two managers, but realistically, do you think if Carl had stayed, do you think we'd find ourselves in the position that we're in now, going into a playoff semi-final?
No. No, nothing against Carl. You know, I always said that I didn't mind him, but I think his reluctance to change things was his own downfall, and I think it in a blessing in a way, not to be horrible, he went and it was just a time for Bose to bring in some fresh ideas, and it has changed. No one can doubt that it has changed, but I can't see if I still envisage Carl playing his 4-2-3-1 or whatever you want to call it, because that's the way he is, and there's nothing wrong with that. That's just the way that Carl wanted to play, and Bose has come in, changed it about a bit, so yeah. But I can still envisage, yeah.
Excellent stuff. Right, we're going to wrap up this little segment now. When we come back, we're going to be listening, I think, to the announcement for Player of the Year. I'm going to wrap it up because Amy's bringing me a cup of tea.
It's very presumptuous.
Yeah, keep going.
Bless her, having to make four trips as well.
Please say, Dan, you're just going to sit and drink it because he thinks it's real.
Charlton Live.
The Sports Association's Player of the Season is Patrick Beck. The Barney Goldwyn Player of the Year for 2018 is Joe Rigo. Now we come to the Player of the Year. Well, I can tell you the voting was very, very tight. And taking 13% of the vote,
in third place. So it shows you there's a good spread of players that were voted for. In third place this season is Jake Forster-Cassidy. Jake Forster-Cassidy is in third place player of the year. Yes, with 15% of the votes. This season's runner-up is Tariq Fosu-Henry. Runner-up player of the year, Tariq Fosu-Henry, just put his jacket on his senior, as voted by the fans' player of the year, takes 28% of the vote, and that goes to Jay De Silva. Jay De Silva, sorry. Jay De Silva, the fans' player of the year, 2017-18.
Charlton Live.
There is one more special award, and this is the Charlton fans' special award, and this is for the contribution to the development of the club over recent years. Now, the winner of this award has been in the club since 2010. He's ever popular with the fans. He's been an outstanding role model for the club as player, captain, mentor and coach. Not you, Jason, by the way. You've had your little club. His presence has always been acknowledged by the Valley faithful, and his dedication, commitment, passion, energy and enthusiasm for all that his children is celebrating tonight. And I think we gave it away. It's JJ himself sitting on the top table. He's done that.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Live.
So there we have it, the 2017-18 Player of the Year goes to Jay De Silva. Young Player of the Year went to Joe Aribo as well. So, I mean, two very deserving recipients of those awards.
Yeah, I think it was, we said before, it was going to be it was hard to sort of pinpoint one player, but I mean, there's many games that Jay has been, you know, outstanding for us. I think to an extent, he was really good last year, and he just seems to have come on leaps and bounds. I mean, quite a lot of the time, he gets targeted from obviously with the crossfield balls with big lumps running at him, but he seems to cope really well, and he's vastly improved this year. And fair play to him. And it's just unfortunate he's had that little knocker just a few weeks ago. But yeah, I think a well-deserved winner. Yeah,
and we heard about the spread of the votes there with so obviously. Tariq Fosu came second and Jake Forster-Cassie came third, but the actual percentages in the votes, it was really, really tight, and obviously there was plenty more votes that went to the players that came slightly further down the pecking order as well.
Yeah, and I don't think that's a surprise really. Like I said earlier, I think you could argue that there were five or six worthy winners of it this year. As I said, Ben Amos as well, Josh McGuinness for his goals. Yeah, there's players all across the pitch, Pierce, you name them, they've all been brilliant, and that's why we're where we are as well. I think Jay's thoroughly deserved winner as well, and congratulations to him. But yeah, all of them have been fantastic this year, and as we said earlier, the spread just shows that we've got a good group of players at the moment.
And of course, finally, we heard Johnny Jackson there being given his award. We knew it was going to come at some point this evening. We were crying really about him on last week's Sunday evening Charlton Live, but you know, as I was saying, I think I'd quite happily see him be given an award every night for the rest of the season. Really.
The shock of the century had he not got something tonight. I think we all reasonably expected Johnny to be recognised in some way or other, and it's fitting that he is, because of what he's given us as a player, as a captain, and now an assistant manager. So yeah, that was a lovely touch.
Yeah, and a great speech at the end there from Lee Bowyer as well. There's still plenty more to come this season, and I love the excitement you could clearly hear on Lee's voice there. Right, we're going to cut off now from this bit. What you're going to hear next is a succession of player interviews. We're going to try and get as many as possible before they all have to go home quite early, because of course we've got the game coming up on Thursday. But that's what's coming next here on this Charlton Live Player of the Year Dinner Special.
Charlton Live.
We're joined now by the Player of the Year, Jay De Silva, here on Charlton Live. Jay, congratulations first of all. It's an award that's voted for by the fans. So how does it feel?
Yeah, thank you very much for all the support. It's a very proud moment for me. I've got a great bunch of players this year, and a few people that have had great seasons. So to win it out of everyone, it's a very proud moment, and I'm definitely honoured to win that.
And of course, it's a very interesting part of your career as well, because of course on loan from Chelsea, it's not unusual for young players to come out to a lower league club to try and gain some experience. So the experience that you've got this year, is that all something that will help you as your career goes forward?
Yeah, it's been a very enjoyable season, playing a lot of minutes, gaining that experience, and at a great club like Charlton, I think I fit right in. So yeah, I've enjoyed every minute of it, and yeah, it's been a great season, but we still got a few more pushes to go. Try to get to Wembley and gain promotion. That's the main goal.
Obviously, as the season's progressed, we've had that little run in the middle of the campaign where it's looking a bit difficult, but since Lee Bowyer's come in as well, it seems to have found an extra 10% within the squad to push us towards these playoffs at the end of the season.
Yeah, I think it's a crucial times. Time of the season, I think everyone's noticed that, and everyone's found that extra 10% to give more, and we know what we need to do, and everyone's focused and ready to achieve it.
Yeah, the little bit of success last summer, of course, with the Euros under-19. So you've got that taste now for winning silverware. So is that going to help you as we look to try and get towards Wembley?
Yeah, well, hopefully. Obviously, I love winning. I always have loved winning, so I'll do all I can to win as much as I can. So yeah, that's the main thing.
And finally, of course, obviously, like I say, you've won the Player of the Year, but there's a lot of great competition up there. So to come out on top of the likes of Jake Forster-Cassie, Tariq Fosu, Ben Amos, all these players who've done so well this season, it shows that A, we've got a decent squad this year, but B, that you must have really excelled yourself.
Yeah, it's definitely a great squad this year. I'm still pretty shocked, to be honest, that I won it. But yeah, I'm very honoured to win out of all the great players that I've played this season.
Just finally, actually, I mean, thinking about your future now. So obviously you're on loan from Chelsea. I mean, next season, do you see yourself trying to get back out on loan? I'm not sure what your contract situation is with Chelsea. I mean, are you thinking you might try and get back out on loan if Charlton get promoted? Would that be a place that could be good for you? Or?
Yeah, I think right now in this position in my career, I think that would be a good thing to do, is to go back out on loan, whether it's Charlton or somewhere else. I don't really mind, to be honest, as long as I'm playing. Obviously, these last couple of loans at Charlton have been great. I've fit in really well, got along with everyone. So yeah, I've really enjoyed my time here. So whether it is Charlton or whether it is somewhere else, I'm ready for the new challenge.
Yes, I mean, just on Thursday, obviously, it's a big game. What's the mood like in the camp? What's it like around the training ground at the moment? Obviously, with big game Thursday and potentially Wembley, what's the mood like?
Yeah, I think everyone is aware of how big the game is, and that's just making us even more focused, more ready to achieve what we set out to do at the start of the season.
Charlton Live.
Well, now we're joined by Patrick Bowery, who did win an award tonight, the China Flake Disabled Supporters Award Player of the Season. So Patrick, congratulations for that. You must be very proud.
Yeah, I just said it there. I didn't really expect a reward today, but I'm delighted about it. It's nice to be recognised by the supporters.
Yeah, I was going to say, because since you've come in over the last couple of years, the supporters have really taken to you and you've become a bit of a fan's favourite. And in particular, over the last few weeks, where you've built this superb partnership up with Jason Pearce, and you two have just started clicking together since Pearce has come back from injury, you know, just at the right time, I guess, for us.
Yeah, definitely. First, the support from the supporters. I love how they're supporting me, how they're supporting the team. And I love also the partnership with Jason Pearce, and since Lee Boyer took over, we made some tactical switches in the defence, and I think it suits us very well. And I think the 9 or 10 games he was in charge, we kept a lot of clean sheets, and this is the reward for the hard work.
And obviously with Thursday coming up against Shrewsbury, we know perhaps what to expect from them. There's been two very physical, tough battles, so you're going to have to be right your very best on Thursday to face a very difficult Shrewsbury team.
Yeah, definitely. We know that. We started to work on them today at the training ground. We have two more sessions. I think for Thursday we will be perfect prepared, but we know what is coming. We played twice against the season. We lost once, we won 1-1. And it will be a tough fight.
And over the course of the last few weeks, what do you think it is that Lee Boyer has brought to the squad that's helped us, you know, get back on this good run just as we approach the end of the season?
When Lee Boyer came in, he said he'd like to play with two strikers. I think this was a change of the system. I think it suited us really well. We got good results. We scored more goals. But also defensive work. We started to work more on defensive shapes with Chaco also, and it suited us. We kept more clean sheets, and I think it's also fundamental that on some positions you have this solid partnerships, and he kept them over the last 10 games, and I think you can see that we are doing well.
And obviously it's a member of the back four that's won the Player of the Year this season in Jay De Silva. I mean, how much do you enjoy playing alongside him?
Yeah, definitely. He's an amazing player. He's very good. He had a great season. The last few weeks he didn't play so much, also because he had an injury, and when he was away, Lewis Page did a great job. But as always, when he was on the pitch, he made good games, and I love to play with him.
Do you think that having Jason Pearce and yourself playing regularly over the last 10 games has helped? Because I know earlier in the season there were a few injuries and people kept coming in and out. So over the last 10 games, do you think the fact that you've been able to play lots of games together, has that helped?
I think it's always good to keep good relations, especially in the centre-back position. And like you said, we played the last few weeks always together. And I think we showed that we are in good form together. And we really enjoy to play with each other.
And you're going into Thursday with a lot of confidence?
Yeah, definitely. If you see our last our form lately, we show good results. We beat them three weeks ago. We know what is facing us on Thursday, and we go with a lot of confidence, and we want to get promoted.
Charlton Live.
Right, we're joined now here on Charlton Live by the Young Player of the Year for 2017-18, Joe Aribo. Joe, congratulations on your award, Valley Gold Award, obviously coming up through the academy via Staynestown. You must be very proud.
At first coming, it was difficult, like, just thinking, am I as good as everyone else here? But, like, I'm just happy with this award. Like, it's given me that kind of assurance and relief to get the award. So, yeah, I'm very happy.
I remember when you came in sort of midway through last season and you had that superb start. I think you had a few assists, didn't you, quite early on. And then, yeah, this season in particular, you've really started to stake a claim for your place over the last couple of months. And, you know, just at the right time as well, with I think the likes of Cashy out injured and Charlton looking for someone in the midfield who could really sort of drive us on, and the results have improved as well. So you must be very happy with how that's gone.
It's come with a bit of luck, like you say, with like injuries. I've had to wait and bide my time. So when I've got the chance, I've just thought I have to just take the chance that I get. And then,
when you look at some of the people who've won the awards that you've won this evening over the last few years, like I think Addy Lookman's won it, I think Joe Gomez has won it. I mean, to be up amongst those sort of names, you must be really, really happy with that, because you look at the careers that those players are going on to have as well. Yeah. You know, in such a young age to win that award, does that just sort of give you the confidence to think, well, I can really go somewhere with my career now?
Yeah, definitely gives me the confidence. Like, I literally didn't know until like I saw the Shield. And then I saw the names, I was like, wow, like, there's actually big names on it. So, yeah, like, it does give me a lot of confidence.
Obviously, Lee Bowyer himself came up through the Charlton Academy as a youngster. So, I mean, are you able to take a lot of, you know, wisdom and experience from what he's achieved in his time at Charlton and therefore in his career after?
Yeah, even before he was the gaffer, like, I would do one-to-ones with him. So, like, it's just always been like that with him, especially where he was a midfielder as well. So, like, I just feel like I can take a lot from his game to improve my game. So yeah, it's like,
obviously we're all sort of in a slightly different Player of the Year situation this year, because it's not the end of the season. Normally we have this at the end of the season, but Charlton fans are still itching to get onto Thursday now. We can't wait for it. I mean, how are you feeling ahead of the game? You feeling nervous, confident?
Nerves are natural, but I'm feeling confident. Like, I feel like if we go there and we battle, we give 100%, we can beat anyone. So yeah, I'm feeling quite confident.
So obviously with the two games we had against Shrewsbury as well, we know it's going to be a very physical battle. We went there a few weeks ago. Me and Tom were at the game and enjoyed a really good win. I mean, you know what we're going to expect from this team. You know what we're going to expect from them. Like, it's going to be a tough one.
Yeah, definitely. We have to battle. That's the main thing. We just have to go out there and battle first, earn the right to play. And then that's what we'll do next.
Charlton Live.
We're joined now on Charlton Live by the man who's taken us to the playoffs, Lee Bowyer. Thanks for coming to join us. First of all, this evening's Player of the Year award's gone to Jay De Silva. I mean, there's so many possible candidates it's gone to, but Jay's had a great season, hasn't he?
Yeah. He's been outstanding all season. Obviously, he had that little injury probably about a month ago. He was out for a little bit. But apart from that, he's unreal. He knows how I feel about him. He's a top professional and a really, really nice fellow, and putting that aside, he's got so much ability, and he's definitely going to go a long way in the game.
And you can see by how close the percentages was for all the different players that there was plenty to pick from this season, which I just goes to show that Charlton's squad this season got a fair bit of quality in it, isn't it?
Well, yeah, for sure. Like, and the thing that stood out for me is we're all left-footed. the top three were all left-footed, so but I think Ben, the keeper's been outstanding, especially of late, you know. So he's just got better and better as the season's gone on. So, again, you could go through, like, in the time I've been in charge, then I think six or seven of the games, I couldn't have told you a man in a match, you know. That's how good they've been for me. And over the season, little Jay De Silva's been outstanding.
Yeah. Now, of course, I was talking to you in the tunnel at Rochdale on Thursday, and you said, on Saturday, so we'll put Saturday's game behind us, because you know that this coming Thursday, it's a huge task, and the performances that we've put in over the last 10 games, you know that your team are going to be up for it.
Yeah, well, there was. What did anyone want me to say? Anything negative about the players when they've just got to the playoffs? How can you say anything negative? Okay, they wasn't the best on Saturday, but I think it's a difficult situation when you know you're there. You don't want to run around, get injured, and Shrewsbury would have been the same when they played MK. Like they wouldn't have lost MK if they had to win that game. We would have probably beat Rochdale if we needed to win that game. So for sure, but yeah, I know for 100% is on Thursday you see a completely different team to what you see on Saturday, and with how's the effort and the fight. So that's gonna. Without saying.
And how's the preparations been going so far?
Yeah, it was good. Sunday, they had a day off Sunday, so they would have rested. And then we had them in today. And didn't do too much with the ones that started, but the ones that didn't start, they trained like a normal day. Tomorrow, we're in tomorrow morning. And tomorrow and Friday, they're two important days. Tomorrow and Friday. Tomorrow and Wednesday, because it's a Thursday game. I'm thinking Thursday, Friday. So, yeah, so the next 2 days are the important days for preparation-wise.
Of course, we heard the great ovation you got from the supporters when you came down this evening. Obviously, over your 10 games, is perhaps Charlton fans might have been looking at the end of Robinson's spell, and we were just sort of going slightly off the boil, and Charlton fans were wondering, are we going to be able to find something within the squad? But you found something within the squad to take us over the line, and you said it at the start when you came in, you promised us we were going to be in the playoffs, and it's happened. I mean, can you put down to what you changed slightly that this happened?
Just to believe in themselves, and because they've got a great squad of players. Like, how many different players have I used? And they've all put in their own bit, you know. How many different goal scorers have we had? You know, like, for me, it was making them believe in themselves and bringing them together. Because, and I've been honest with them, and I told them, like, from the second I walked in and was in charge, I said, look, I won't accept anyone playing for themselves. You play as a team, and that's the most important thing, because that's how you go and win things. And I wouldn't accept anything less than that. And then all of a sudden, they took on board what I was saying, and then I wanted them to fight for each other and be one. And that's what they are now. They're a completely different animal from when I first took over. So the togetherness that you see now, week in, week out, apart from Scunthorpe and apart from Saturday, then they've been outstanding. And I have no doubt whatsoever that Thursday they will be the same.
And now, when I was speaking to Jay De Silva earlier, I was talking about how, for him as a young player, the experience of what we're going through at the moment will be great for his career going forward. Now, you're a young manager. Your first spell as a caretaker manager. So to be involved in such important games at this stage of the season, is that something that you're thinking, well, this is really building my CV almost, if you're sort of half thinking about maybe going to management full-time?
Yeah, this has nothing to do with me. We're doing well, but it's down to the lads and the fans, you know. Like, the fans have played a massive part as well. We're at Portsmouth, we just went to Shrewsbury on a Tuesday night and worked our socks off, and then we had hardly anything, and then we had no time to recover for Portsmouth away, which is probably the hardest place to go in the division with their home fans. So our fans have helped, and for me, it's not about me and my CV or anything like that. I'm just grateful that I've got this opportunity. Obviously I am, but the most important thing for me is to get this club back in the championship, and I've said that all along. And like everyone says, I just speak the truth, and I said we'll get to the playoffs, and we have. And I've said that I don't think anyone will beat us over two legs. I honestly don't think they ever will. I think we'll beat Shrewsbury over the two legs, but Shrewsbury, it's a different challenge, because how competitive it's going to be. It's just going to be a physical game, home and away. So as long as we stand up and be canted and stick together, then I think we'll come out on top.
And do you think the fact that we've beaten them quite recently could give us an edge?
Yeah, because we went and done to them what they've done to us here, and no one else has done that to them at their place. So Thursday's important, but then they know what we've done to them at their place. So then I think we will have an advantage. But they will think the same, you know. At the end of the day, it's two teams that are going to be going out there and battling, and the best team will win.
You talk about the belief and togetherness that you've given the side, and I think you see the fans react to that as well. You think of Blackburn at home, but you say Portsmouth and Shrewsbury away. How important are the fans going to be on Thursday night as well?
Well, they're massive. Like I've said all along, that I don't think the fans realise what a bigger part they've like. I've bigger part they play. I've played at clubs and they make a massive difference. You know, like they, and Portsmouth are probably only the reason why they are where they was is because of their home fans. No other reason, because I don't think they was that good of a team. But their fans, it's an amazing thing. Like you just see them lift, and at Blackburn, you must have seen it yourselves. I don't know if you was there, but you'd have seen yourselves that there was times when we was on the back foot against Blackburn, they're a team which has been promoted, but then our fans seemed to realise that and notice that, and then they started seeing it, and then we got out of that situation and we come through it. So fans are massive for any club. So yeah, but especially here, we definitely need them on Thursday.
Charlton Live.
Right, joining us now on Charlton Live, Jacko. I've talked to you many times over the last few years, but the last couple I found a little bit emotional, actually, knowing that it's coming to the end of your playing career. And first of all, you got a nice award today that you weren't expecting, but, I mean, once again, shows how much the fans think of you.
Yeah, complete surprise, actually. Took me, caught me off guard. When they said, been here since 2010, I thought, that might be me. And then they said a few more things, and I was like, no, that is me. I didn't know it was coming, so it was a lovely surprise. Didn't have a speech prepared, so you have to think on your feet. Hopefully, another one where I thought I might lose it, but I held it together. So, like you said, it's an emotional time for myself as well. So, it's been a great run. It's been a great week as well. You know, the send-off last week. Obviously, again on Saturday at Rochdale, and then tonight as well.
So. Yeah, and as we were speaking on Saturday, I was sort of joking that it's going to be a very different player of the year this season, but it's because we're still involved in a big game that's coming up. So it's been a bit of more of a relaxed evening for you. But with the game that's coming up, I mean, how are you feeling at the moment? Are you feeling nervous? Are you feeling?
Yeah, I am feeling nervous. Like, I was just talking to Terry there off camera, and I get more nervous now than I ever did when I was playing. Strange, I suppose it's because once the game started, you probably feel a little bit helpless.
A bit powerless, yeah.
You can do, obviously all your work's done really as a coach, and you do everything in the week on the training pitch, and you can affect little things from the side and at half before and at half time and stuff like that, but really it's sort of your work's done and it's over to the players then. So I think the nerves come from being a little bit helpless. I'd much rather just be out there, and then you know that you can
pop up at the last minute like
normal. Yeah, so
well, we're not ruling that out yet, of course. Exactly. I mean, again, as we said on Saturday, I mean, there's still that dream that could happen, that it could happen at Wembley, get a 500th appearance. But before then, you've obviously got to plan now for Thursday. We've seen Shrewsbury a couple of times this season now, two very different games perhaps for Charlton fans. I mean, how's the preparation going? I guess you already know what to expect from them.
Yeah, I mean, having played them a couple of times, we know what they're about, we know what to expect. Obviously, we'll be watching their last couple of performances to see what they're doing, whether they're doing anything different. And preparing for that today was pretty light, because obviously lads are 2 days after a game. We got a little bit of work into the lads who weren't involved or didn't get many minutes. And then tomorrow all the focus will be tactical stuff, preparing for Shrewsbury. It's the equivalent of a Thursday of a normal week, which is your big day of doing all your match prep stuff really. So tomorrow will be an important day out there, everyone. That's why they need to get off early tonight, get their rest in, no boozing, fully focused on the job at hand.
And we've been sort of, as fans, talking about how we're feeling nervous and stuff. And as a player, do you allow that to affect you and the squad themselves? I mean, because if you look at the run we've had over the last 10 games in particular under Bowyer, I mean, we're not really counting Saturday. If you look at the games before that, we're one of the form teams going into that playoffs.
Oh yeah, we're definitely one of the form sides. As far as the occasion and the nerves, I think that very much comes down to the individual. I think if you're playing well, obviously it helps, and you're in a good place as a side. We're really confident in what we're doing, but obviously the further it goes now, the more pressure becomes on every game. And that becomes down to the individual, yeah. Like I said, I get more nervous now than I ever did when I was playing. I didn't really, I probably felt a little bit of pressure, but I didn't like get too nervous before games, whereas now I do. So that's how I deal with it now. Obviously, every player is different. A little bit of nerves never hurts, I don't think. Keeps you focused, keeps you on your toes. But obviously, you don't want them to consume you. But we've had, like you say, over the past 5-6 weeks, we've had a lot of high-pressure games. You know, you look at Portsmouth away, when it was like a bit of a shootout between us and them for that sixth spot at the time, and I thought we handled it much better than they did on the day. So lads have been in that environment already, so they know what to expect.
Of course, we should probably mention that we're here for the Player of the Year award. It's Jay De Silva who's won it, but you know, there's plenty of viable candidates out there this season who could have had it.
Well, I'll be honest, I thought to not see Ben Amos in the top three was a bit of a surprise to me. I think he's been outstanding. Maybe I'm guilty of focusing a bit of my attention towards the back boys of late, because somehow become the defensive coach. I didn't do much of that when I was playing, but yeah, a lot of my focus has been on them. So I'm looking at Ben as part of that unit, looking at Piercy and Pat, and I think I spoke about it before, but I think Jason Pierce, since he's come back into the side, has been an absolute rock for us back there, and I think he drags the level of performance out of all the other lads back there. I think they play better when they've got Piercy alongside them, screaming and shouting at them and making sure that they're on it. So for me, another viable candidate, Bauer. Jay De Silva, a worthy winner.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that, because obviously you say you've been working with the back four there, and as one of the more mature players in the squad and also coaching now, does that give you a lot of pride to see someone young and a part of that back four you've been working with to get that award?
It does, yeah. And I've been impressed with that boy since the moment he stepped in the door last season. I remember there was a long period where he didn't play, and his attitude was unbelievable for someone who wasn't playing. Wasn't getting much opportunity. A lot of the time it would be me and him after games doing our running, just us two, because I wasn't really involved and he wasn't getting any opportunity. And he didn't once ever moan, which I found amazing for someone that young, who was on loan and from a big club and probably expecting to play and not getting that game time. He just got on with it. He knuckled down. Then when his opportunity came, he grabbed it. He grabbed it. He hasn't really looked back since, barring the few injuries that he's had. Obviously curtailed it a little bit, but a credit to Chelsea, credit to himself. I think he's been brilliant for us, and he deserves applaudits, because he's a great lad too.
And you talk about attitude as well. Obviously, Mark Marshall in an interview the other day said he came in and worked when he wasn't getting in the team, trying to work. It's something we've seen across the whole team this year. Is that what you put down the reason we've made the playoffs, down to that attitude? Because obviously you've been here a long time, but the last 3 or 4 years perhaps we've had players that have come in not shown that desire and commitment that we've seen from this group.
Yeah, it's a big part of it. I think there's a lot of ability in that changing room, and that's probably the first and foremost. But without that work ethic, it doesn't take you very far, and I think to have success in any squad, you have to have that, and we have got that. We've got that in abundance. Like you say, Marshy, perfect example of it. Not always gone his way this season, been in and out of the side, but always out there, you know, working on his game, even though he's probably 30 plus. Is he, Marshy? What, he's 30? Still keen to learn, picks my brains about things, try and help him where I can. Doesn't think he knows it all, or that he can't get better even at that age. So credit due, but I think that is, that's a perfect example of the attitude that we've got in this squad. Lads who want to work hard, who want to improve, and they want to drag standards up around them. I think that's important, that that you have players that demand from each other as well. And the squad almost manages itself on that front.
Just merging the two on defence and hard work. I mean, since Piercy's come back, he's just an absolute warrior, and it just seemed when we spoke to Pat earlier as well, of the partnership that they've obviously formed now in the recent weeks, and to, like you say, you can't see us losing over two legs, as Bo's was saying. How important and how drilled are they in training? Because obviously it just doesn't happen overnight, so you must have worked with them a lot.
Yeah, we work hard on it, and I like to think that I'm quite tough on them. But I think it's important, especially in defence. You know, forward plays obviously a lot more. You want it to be freer, You know, you want to give them license, yeah. Whereas the defensive side of it is more drilled. They haven't got license to do what they want. They have to be sort of regimented, if you like, and they buy into it. But having someone like Piercy there makes your job as a coach so much easier, because you know the information that you're giving to him, that he's taking on board, and that he's going to make sure that everyone around him is doing it. But I mean, they all take it on board, to be fair to them. They're great, and they buy into what, you know, what I'm asking them. And it's not, it's nothing they haven't seen before. But even when you're getting them clean sheets, I think it's important to just, well, it doesn't matter, we're still doing the same thing. You know, we're not coming off it now because we've got a clean sheet. We keep doing it, and I think we've only conceded 5 goals in the 10 games. And I like to point out that one of them was offside. and that Patrick slipped on one of them, and that Piercy shortchanged the goalie with a back header on one of them. So
effectively, we conceded no goals in 10 games.
We'll give the guy at Rochdale his credit, because he's quite pleased that he scored that goal.
It's
down to the lads. They've been unbelievable, and like you say, they've been warriors, and they throw their bodies on the line. Sometimes it's just down to that. You can't coach that. Sometimes it's that desire to keep the ball out of the net, either got it or you haven't, and they've got it.
So, considering you're a defence coach, who's taking credit for Jason Pierce's finish? Is that you or both?
It's me as well, yeah.
Right, Jacko, you need to get off to bed and get rested up for the playoff final. So we're gonna let you go. Cheers for that.
Charlton Live.
Right, joining us now on Charlton Live, we've got Kit Graham, Grace Coombs and Charlie Clifford from the Charlton Athletic women's team. It's been another successful season for the women's team. Obviously, it's not over yet, but first bit of silverware, yes, in the Capital Cup. Kit, I'll start with you. 2-1 win over Palace. You must be delighted to get your first trophy on the board for the season.
Yeah, definitely. I think we were a bit disappointed with the West Ham game. We had a point to prove, like to ourselves mainly, that we could go out and we could get our first piece of silverware, and we did that yesterday. We did it confidently.
And against Palace as well, which all Charlton fans will be pleased to hear.
Yeah, we've got a lot of ex-players that play for them, so it's always good to
be. Now, of course, it's been an amazing season for the women this year, but for you personally, you passed your 200 games over at Arsenal. Me and Nath came up to that game to watch that one. You haven't quite got your 200 goals yet, but I'm sure that'll come within the next few days.
Yeah, I'm nearly there.
So you've been at Charlton for so long, and I hope this doesn't sound awful, but have you not ever been tempted to try and go and play at a higher level? Because every time I've seen you play, you seem like a step above some of the opponents we've had this season.
I've always been here ever since I was little, so Cheltenham's all I know, really. It's such a family vibe. They've always been good to me as a club, and I just try and repay that, really.
Now, obviously this season, you're challenging for the title. You're also, you know, also applied for promotion to the Championship. I guess the best way to do it as players, I guess, would be to win the league and then to win the playoff as well. So, Grace, how do you fancy your chances with just a couple of games left to go?
We're in a really good position. So I think we need mathematically 1 point in 3 games. So it's all in our own hands. We're just trying to focus on one game at a time, hopefully get there, and then obviously we've got a big playoff game in a couple of weeks if we do get the points that we need.
And obviously, I guess winning is sort of a habit once you get into it, because it has been such a successful season. Is it just the fact that you've had so much momentum to take you through the campaign has helped you just keep on going?
Yeah, I think so. So we had a really good start to the season. I think we won our first 8 games, and then we had a couple of weeks where we lost a couple of games in the league, went a little bit off track, but we managed to pull that back, and I think we've lost 2 cup games or 3 cup games since then. So momentum definitely helps. I think, like I said, it brings confidence within the team, and the more you win, the more everyone's enjoying it, and that's when you play your best football.
Charlie, what do you think has been like the key to the success this season?
I think that we've been so much more together this season, so as a team everyone feels that they can get on well with everybody, where it might not have been like that in previous years. But as well, not just the players but the coaches as well, so everyone with the coaches, everyone's all gets on very well. So I just think that's this year.
What about Ratish as the manager as well? We speak to him quite a lot throughout the season to get an update on how you're doing, and You know, he seems like a fairly confident chap, and he's obviously done wonders with you over the last couple of years.
Yeah, I think that with him being an ex-player as well, so that helps, and because he's young as well, so he knows how we feel in, and everyone just gets on well with him as well. So, but when he needs to be harsh, he can be harsh, but he does love the sound of his own voice as well, so he will be.
Yeah. So finally, we talked about that Arsenal FA Cup game. Obviously, it was a great run to get up to the quarterfinals. The lowest ranked team left at that stage as well, Kit. I mean, to play against players of that level, I mean, even though it ended up 5-0, I mean, that was definitely not a fair scoreline from what we saw. But I mean, it must be a great experience to play against, you know, one of the best teams in Europe.
Yeah, definitely. I think we got lucky with a few draws, like drawing Cardiff against all odds, that we pulled out them in the hat. But it was always going to be a test of how much work we could put into it. Our build up to the game, we trained so hard, and it was literally defend for our lives, basically, and that's what we did. And in the end, they scored 3 late goals, and fitness in the end.
So obviously, going forward, the club have put in this bid to go up into the Championship. I mean, how important would that be for the club if they can make that step up? If it doesn't come through promotion, like if they can go up, you know, via the draw or wherever it is.
I think it'd be great. We've been here since we were really young, when the team were one of the best in the country. So I think us going forward, I think we say putting the club back where it probably should be would be a great achievement. And yeah, they've been a successful club in history, and what happened, and it'd be great to just get their names back up there and try and make it one of the best teams in the country again.
And there was over 40,000 fans at the FA Cup final on Saturday. Obviously, Arsenal, who beat you, got to the final. But I mean. Women's football for us, I mean, it's something that we've started watching over the last few years. It seems like, in particular after England got to the World Cup final as well, it seems like it's getting more and more popular. Do you feel that the fans are really starting to get involved with it now?
Yeah, I think that even in the WSL 1 and 2, the crowds there have started to be improved as well. And obviously getting 4,000 fans at that game, every little helps. And obviously with the England team doing so well, it's broadcasted everywhere. So everyone's more aware of everything now. So hopefully it will start to improve again for us as well as a club as well.
Excellent. Well, good luck for the rest of the season. I'm no doubt that you're going to win the league. But
thank you.
Hopefully in the playoffs as well, you'll be up there next season. So,
well done. Thank you.
Cheers.
Charlton Live.
Right, we're joined now by Gene and Ian, the organisers of the Player of the Year dinner. It's been another superb event. Obviously slightly different this year because it's not quite the end of the season, because we've got something extra coming as well. But Gene, I'll start with you. After a little hiatus, it's great to be back and to share this evening with the players.
Yeah, definitely. I think it was worth waiting for, in a sense. I'm sure a few people missed it last year, but it was kind of, there's more to look forward to when you do miss one, I think, in a sense. And of course, the way things have gone the last few weeks, the impetus has sort of grown, and more than we ever thought it would, obviously.
Yeah, I guess the excitement's been pretty palpable throughout the evening, because, like we said, with the playoffs still to come, it feels like, you know, what a great time for everyone to come together and just to wish the players all the best for what's coming up over the next few days.
Yeah, definitely. And also, I think another thing people wanted to come for was to say goodbye to Jacko, which was a very emotional time, really.
Yeah, I've struggled with that over the last few weeks as well, Ian. I mean, there's so much hard work goes into what you've done to get this dinner up and running. So, I mean, you must be really happy with how it's gone this evening.
Very, very happy. I think Adja Brown was a definite advantage to us. He's such a funny man.
Yeah.
But we were very happy with the way it went. As you, I'm sure, know, we got a message through from Lee Bowyer yesterday saying we'd got to finish much earlier than originally scheduled, which put us under a bit of pressure. But actually, I think, looking back on it, I think it tightened the event up, because it meant we'd really got to get on with it, and we couldn't have a lot of waffle. And in fact, in the end, we were only about 10 minutes later than he wanted, so it worked out fine.
And it is a great event for the fans to get to mix with the players, because obviously we don't always get the chance to do that, and it's great that the players are happy to come and spend their evening with the fans as well.
They seem to enjoy it almost as much as we do. I think we've got such a good bunch of lads here at the moment. All the people, all the guests were saying that, you know, everyone's very approachable and just, you know, like one of our own kind of thing, if to coin a phrase, really. Which is great.
So, right, starting to look ahead to the next few days? I mean, I'm absolutely nervous. How are you guys feeling?
Excited, I think, as much as nervous. I don't think 2 weeks ago we thought we'd got much chance after I went home from the Scunthorpe home game. As far as mentally, I'd written it off completely. I mean, I don't think many people in the ground that day would have thought we were going to win the next three games, or to all of which were hard ones. So really, we've come out of nothing. And I think if you look back through history, the teams that do well in the playoffs are usually the ones who've got momentum going when they come in. And when we, 20 years ago, we came in on the back of 9 consecutive clean sheets. And okay, it's not quite like that, but we are still coming in, you know, on a roll.
Excellent. Well, thanks to both of you for all your hard work getting this event going, and thanks for having us as well. We've really enjoyed being here and getting to speak to the players and whatnot. And hopefully this time next year we'll be a player of the year in the championship that we'll be talking about.
It'd be really good.
And I hope we'll be here too.
Yeah, thank you for doing it with us.
Charlton Live.
Right, we're now coming to the end of our Charlton Live Player of the Year. Doing a special for 2017-18. It's been a great event here at the Valley. I hope you've enjoyed the podcast. Really grateful to all the players and of course the manager, Lee Bayer, who's joined us on this evening. And Gene and Ian there, who we've just heard right at the end, who've organised a superb dinner. Also want to say thanks to the club as well, who've put up the players to interview for us this evening. It's been a really nice evening, hasn't it, chaps?
Yeah, it's been fantastic. Yeah, the first time I've been, great experience, and as we said earlier, a worthy winner. But I think the whole squad this year, I think we've been much luckier than we've been in recent years to have a squad. And Jacko said it in his interview, the togetherness that they show. Bowyer said it too, the characters that we've got. It's more like a Charlton that I think we have become accustomed to previously. We've perhaps lost a little bit in the last 3 or 4 years, but I think they're well and truly back. And let's hope there's just three more games to really show what they're all about.
Right, this dinner was sort of a nice block between the end of the actual season and the playoffs. There's a nice distraction. Now we're coming to the end of the podcast, and it's just hit me that I'm really, really, really nervous about the game coming up on Saturday.
I've been nervous since last Saturday.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was just saying to Gene I was nervous as soon as the full-time whistle went, and I still had a night out in Manchester, but yeah, I've not stopped thinking about it. I don't know how I'm going to manage. I really don't know how I'm going to manage on Thursday, but I'll have to, just like every other fan. But an early goal would be lovely. If not, then we're going there Sunday as well, which is going to be even more horrible in a way. So we just listen. It's better than just mulling in what mid-table. So we've got to try and embrace it and be as confident as obviously like Bowes was in his interview earlier. So.
And Terry, you've got a commentate on it.
Exactly, I have no idea how that's going to go at all. So I apologise in advance. I think it's probably the best thing I can do. I've spent most of the evening thinking, well, you know, and Tom was bang on it, by the way. It does feel more like Charlton. The last few months since Lee Bowyer's taken over has felt more like Charlton. Now, all right, you could say, well, that's because it's coincided with us winning games of football, and I'm sure there's an element of that. But even without that, I think we've just felt a little bit more together as a club and as a fan base. So I've been trying to convince myself that if it doesn't go well, at least we got that. But I haven't, actually. Not at all.
We need that winner at Wembley, don't we?
Absolutely. I mean, it's all right. Yeah, don't get me wrong. It's been lovely to speak to the players when they're sober. So it has been a shorter night. But I think what's good to see is that they all seem at least focused. And they all get what's at stake.
And if Lee Bowyer was the man motivating you, you'd be playing.
Oh, yeah.
He's certainly one who can get you going. Right, just before we end the show now, I was tweeted by Andrew Buckland during the week. I was asking for some sponsorship for my bike ride, which I've talked about quite a few times over the course of the podcast. And he said he'd give me £25, but he'll double it if during the Charlton Live podcast from the Player of the Year dinner, I get some phrases in. So I'm just going to cheat and do them all now. So I have to say Roger Johnson. So I've said Roger Johnson, and he said he'll double it if I can get Roland out and see how patient I was. So I've been patient waiting for Roland out. There you go, Andrew. You now owe me £50. So if you want to donate for that, so thanks for
I'm
that.
Assuming he didn't put any rules in this.
No, I told him I'd cheat. And I met him very briefly earlier tonight, so thanks for that. Right, so we're coming to the end of it. Don't forget, this has gone out on your podcast feed. Because we were here at the Valley on Monday night, we didn't do our Love Sport show. That's going to be on Wednesday night this week. So if you tune in Love Sport Radio Wednesday night at 9 o'clock, I'll be there with with Aaron and Paul, hopefully. We won't be doing a pre-match preview on Thursday because we've got something on.
Yeah, what is that?
Yeah.
I'm free.
I'm a bit busy in the studio.
Yeah, so we won't be that. We won't even be doing a show on Sunday. So I'll tweet at some point if we do a show, maybe early next week, if we get to Wembley. If we don't,
Wembley build
up. If we don't, you'll never see me again. Right, thanks for joining us, Terry Smith.
Cheers, guys.
Nathan
Cheers.
Muller, Tom Cheers, Wallin. Mate. I've been Louis Mendes. This has been the Cheltenham Live Player of the Year dinner special for 2017-18. Hopefully you've enjoyed it. Thanks for listening all the way to the end if you've got this far, because it's going to be a long one this evening. But I hope you've enjoyed it. Just think, Thursday evening, lads, could be halfway to Wembley.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.